Ok? Muito boa tarde a todos e a todas. There is
a very good afternoon to everyone.
Em nome da Comissão Parlamentar de Assuntos Europeus.
On behalf of the Committee for European Affairs, which I am chair of, I would like to welcome you. Thank you for being here. And I wish you all a fruitful session, an exchange of information and views. It is a personal pleasure for me to welcome our MEPs here, as a former MEP myself. It takes me back to different times that I enjoyed very much. So, I'm very happy to receive this working group from the European Parliament on monitoring the Recovering and Resilience Facility, which is a cross-committee working group. We've got the Budge and Econ committees, EMPO, ITRE, and TRAN are represented in this working group too. So we have a number of committees represented here, and my colleagues, the co-chairs, will also be able to take the floor. We have representatives from the Budget, Finance and Public Administration Committee, the Committee for Economic Affairs and Territorial Cohesion, and the Committee for State Reform and Local Government, as well as representatives of the Azores and Madeira. So a warm welcome to the Portuguese Parliament, the Assembleia da República. And I especially welcome my Portuguese MEP colleagues who are present here. As I was saying, we have simultaneous interpretation. We have Portuguese on Channel 1, English on Channel 2, and we also offer Polish interpretation today. So, without further ado, as we have limited time and a great deal of work to get through, I would just draw your attention to the fact that you do need to be strict on time, and indeed MEPs usually are. For each round, we'll have three rounds, and for each round, each side will have 12 minutes of speaking time. So the Portuguese side will have 12 minutes as well as the MEP side. I would alert you to the fact that recently our European Affairs Committee was able to visit the European institutions, and we had a working dinner with the President of the European Council. We had very interesting meetings with two commissioners, the Portuguese Commissioner Maria Luísa Albuquerque, as well as Commissioner Maros Sefcovic. We also had a meeting with the Director General for Budget. So that was a very fruitful visit. And we left well informed. Now, on the RRP, we have colleagues who are members of other committees here who work more closely in that field. Portugal stands out in Europe for making good use of community funds and leveraging both national and European resources in its organization to promote innovation and to enhance development. And this time will be no different. I can also say that Portugal sits well within the European average of fund use here for the RRP. We have another group that will be dealing with the housing related issues today, but I'm very happy because since the start of the pandemic, really, I have been raising the need for the European Union to pay attention to housing affairs. Although they fall under member state competence, it is a European problem. And I believe it is more productive and we will be more successful if we deal with these matters at the European level. So, the fact that this has now been included in the RRP brings me great satisfaction. If we are successful in solving the housing problem, then that will mean that a great deal of other problems will also find themselves resolved as a consequence. So, dear colleagues from the Portuguese National Assembly and from the European Parliament, I do hope that we have a productive meeting today. I hope that good ideas will come out of it and will be brought back to the European Parliament, particularly by the rapporteurs on the MFF and on the RRP. And finally, last but not least, a very warm welcome to our head of delegation. Welcome. It is a pleasure to receive you here, and I'll now give you the floor so that you can make your initial remarks. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Madam President, Madam Chair, dear chairs, dear colleagues. It's a delight for us as members of the European Parliament to meet you here in the Portuguese Parliament. We are here with a delegation of six members of the European Parliament from two parliamentary committees, the Committee on Budget and the Committee on Economic and Monetary Affairs. The scope of our visit is to discuss about the current state of the implementation of the Recovery and Resilience Facility in Portugal. And we came because Portugal is one of the member states of the Union in which the national plan is the most significant in size in comparison to the GDP of the country. And we have started about 1.5 years ago as European Parliament to visit exactly the countries where the Recovery and Resilience Facility has a significant impact. We were in Greece, in Italy, in Croatia. Now we are in Portugal. We will travel to Spain in autumn. Together here with me are five colleagues, members of the European Parliament. In total, we are six, so I'm just going from my right. We have here Mohamed Shaheen from the Socialists and Democrats Group from the Netherlands, Angelika Winzig from the EPP Group from Austria. We have Tomasz Buczek from Poland, from the PFE Group. We have Carla Tavares from Portugal, from the Socialists and Democrats Group, and Lídia Pereira, also from Portugal, from the EPP Group. As you see, we are both geographically and politically well represented, and we are very interested in having factual, objective discussions with you. Since we arrived yesterday, we had a chance to discuss with the national authorities implementing the program here. We had a chance to discuss with stakeholders, with representatives of mayors, trade unions, and so on. This morning, we visited the Royal Palace of Mafra, where we were impressed to see several projects under the Recovery and Resilience Facility contributing to preserving the cultural heritage of Portugal, but also of Europe, in fact. And we could see the several projects there really helping restore and further develop the palace. In the afternoon, we are going to Amadora to visit a housing project, also funded with RRF funds. In the evening, we are going to see the mayor of the city, and tomorrow morning, we're going to have some other meetings with the government, the Minister of Agriculture, amongst them. We hope to return to Brussels afterwards with a complete image of the effects which this instrument has produced in practice, and we are looking forward to hearing from you as well. What is important, of course, for us as members of the Parliament is the democratic accountability, the transparency, the scrutiny. How were you as a Parliament involved in designing the plan and now in the implementation? How are you being informed? How can you express yourselves? Where do you see the plan right now? Because, as you know, the instrument, the Recovery Resilience Facility, will end later this year, at the end of August. And as you know, it is an instrument of investments and reforms. How do you see progress? Is there any risk of any delays? And particularly, we're interested to hear if there are any significant reforms that still have to pass the Portuguese Parliament, what your assessment is with regards to this. Because until now, Portugal has received 8 out of 10 disbursements, all of them in full, with no amounts frozen or lost, and this places Portugal in the lead. Only Italy, together with Portugal, has received 8 disbursements, Croatia 7, Greece 6, other EU member states 5 disbursements or less. So this also gives us the possibility to congratulate Portugal for the very successful implementation so far. And of course, it is our wish to see Portugal continuing to succeed, managing the last 2 disbursements with success. We're ready to take also to the Commission the messages back home, and we're looking forward to fruitful discussions. Once again, thank you for receiving us.
Thank you very much.
I would now ask the chair of the Budget and Finance Committee, Rui Afonso, to take the floor. Thank you, Madam President. Dear members of the European Parliament Working Group on the Scrutiny of the Recovery and Resilience Facility, chairs and vice chairs of committees, today I speak as the chair of the Budget and Finance Committee of the Portuguese Parliament to stress the importance of the budgetary dimension when it comes to assessing the RRF, particularly in the context of Portugal. Over the past few years, Portugal has made significant efforts in terms of budgetary consolidation, and this has been translated into a gradual reduction of the budget deficit and the public debt ratio. Given this positive trajectory, this is taking place in a structurally demanding context. The country has one of the lowest levels of purchasing power in the European Union, which limits the domestic margins for economic shocks, and we have no additional recourse to public funds. The recent impact of the storm at Kristin led to extraordinary public expenditure to restore infrastructure, support local authorities, and compensate for economic losses in our local productive sectors. At the same time, the increase in the price of fuels has had direct effects on budgetary execution, and that has put pressure on expenditure through reducing income available to families, and that has a knock-on effect on tax income. This is the relevant technical context. The Portuguese taxation context, and the taxation of fuels is a significant component of the final price of fuel. So this becomes particularly sensitive to fluctuations. Any tax adjustment to protect consumers will have immediate effect on public income. And that means that we have a delicate budgetary balance to strike when it comes to social protections. In this context, the Recovery and Resilience Programme has a key role to play, not just as an investment instrument, but as a mechanism for macroeconomic stabilisation more indirectly. The predictability of payments, the programming of funds and milestones and targets become critical factors to avoid additional pressures on the already strained national budget. The democratic monitoring role of the European Parliament has to recognise the budgetary specificities of more vulnerable member states who are more vulnerable to external shocks. We need to ensure that European financial discipline does not compromise the ability of national budgets to respond to exceptional circumstances. I have a key question to raise in our joint work. How can the recovery and resilience mechanism include greater budgetary flexibility for member states who at the same time face climate and energy shocks without risking the objectives of sustainable European public finances? Thank you. Thank you. I now give the floor to Pedro Coimbra, Chair of the Economic Affairs and Territorial Cohesion Committee. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to start by welcoming my colleagues, chairs and vice chairs of our parliamentary committees, and of course a special welcome to the whole European Parliament delegation who are here with us today. It is a great honour to have you here, and it is very significant that we are able to meet today to reflect on the topic at hand. I'd also especially like to welcome the Portuguese MEPs who represent our country there, Carla Tavares and Lídia Pereira. It is a pleasure to meet you here in the Portuguese Parliament. Now, the stock-taking exercise that my political group has made of the RRP is overall positive. This is a pioneering financing instrument in the European context, and it is the first time that member states have actually reached consensus and united around a financial instrument to implement this in Europe with shared objectives. We know why this plan was drawn up in the context of the COVID crisis, and overall our experiences have been very positive. As has been stated, Portugal has a good execution rate currently. I'm not going to draw any dramatic analysis about this implementation rate. Some have implemented more and some less. Some have implemented in a better way and others in a worse way. Portugal sits within the European Union average, and we are proud that we are a good pupil in terms of how we apply community funds, cohesion funds. This is how we want to continue to work, and we want to continue to set a good example for Europe. We have three areas of action here: resilience, climate resilience, digital transition, climate transition. This touches on areas such as mobility, public administration, housing. All of these areas are very important for the country. I am only sorry about one circumstance that we have not been able to change in the European context, and that is the deadlines for financial execution. We know that there was a significant workload involved, and we knew that in order to be able to reach these deadlines and meet them, we would need consensus in Europe, and that was a very difficult thing to reach. So It is somewhat a shame that we were not able to extend the deadline so that we could improve our execution rate. We have a labour shortage in Portugal. We could have implemented this funding more efficiently if we didn't face this problem. Anyone who has been mayor of a local authority or anyone who works with cohesion funds indeed knows how dramatic this is. We have few businesses, we have little manpower. So when we have infrastructure works, public construction, then we find ourselves in great difficulties to actually implement projects fully. And the RRP does cover a significant amount of this type of investment. Then we have investments that are underway and that haven't been concluded yet. They won't be concluded within the RRP deadlines, but we do know that work is being done to try to improve that. So, this has been a positive experience. The initiative was timely. Europe chose the RRP. And now we have a financial instrument that united us, which is still there for the future. And my assessment, and surely the assessment of our whole country, is that this has led to improvements. We have improved our circumstances, our resilience, and we've worked towards digital and climate transition, which was the aim. Thank you. I now give the floor to the chair of the Committee for State Reform, Local Government and the Autonomous Regions. Please go ahead. Thank you, Chair. I'd like to start by greeting our colleagues from the European Parliament and special welcome to Lidia Pereira and Carlo Tavares, who represent us in the European Parliament. Welcome to my fellow chairs and vice chairs, Madam Vice President. I'm the chair of the State Reform and Local Government Committee. I'd like to start by stressing how significant state reform is today for our country. I'm sure you are already aware this government has set up a ministry devoted to state reform. So this really is testament to how important state reform is perceived to be for all of us. The RRM will help us in our ambitious intention to reform the Portuguese state apparatus. And I think this can be divided into three axes. We need to simplify, digitalize, and create greater interoperability. We have made great progress thanks to the recovery and resilience mechanism there. We have our portal, portugal.pt, which has been extended in terms of the number of services that citizens can access through this platform. We were the first EU country to implement the digital wallet for businesses. We've had very positive feedback from the business world because of the availability of this functionality. We also intend to implement the once only policy, which means that every time a business or a citizen has an interaction with a state body, they won't need to resubmit documentation that has already been submitted once. And we're working consistently in this field. Following the storm in the winter, Christine, we have already been able to make use of some of these mechanisms to help us respond more quickly to the needs of citizens. Then we have a second axis when it comes to upskilling of our public administration, be that central administration, state administration, or local. We are investing in training and knowledge innovation for our staff. We also need to focus on retaining talent, which is a significant factor in the public administration. The third axis refers to decentralization and strengthening local power. So we're not just working on state reform, but also local reforms. We're trying to strengthen the powers of local administrations. We're not just wanting to centralize services, but also bring them closer to citizens. We want to bring citizens closer to decision-making centers, and the RRP will play a big role in speeding this up, as we've heard today. Local authorities have played a significant role in the construction of new housing, and the RRP played a key role there. Just have a final comment to make because of recent events in Portugal. I'm sure you're all aware that at the end of January and early in February, we were hit heavily by storms in Portugal. And that did compromise our ability to reach certain targets. So I'd feed into the reflection work here that for future recovery and resilience mechanisms, there should be the possibility to accommodate for such extraordinary events that might affect deadlines and timelines. Thank you. Thank you very much. I now give the floor to the chair of the European Affairs Committee, or rather to the delegation leader of the European Parliament. And perhaps you can give the floor to your colleagues.
First round, two colleagues will take the floor, Carla Tavares and Angelika Vincic. So if you agree, Carla is first to tell about the way in which we see in general the implementation of the program in Portugal, and to, of course, ask also some questions if she has to you, to our Portuguese colleagues. Carla, please, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Siegfried. Muito obrigada. Vou falar em português. Cumprimentar.
I'd like to greet Madam Chair of this Commission. Please consider yourselves all greeted to save time. It's an honor to be here today with our colleagues from the European Parliament. We don't have silver bullets for this. These missions, and this is not our first mission, but we're getting to the end of the deadline for the RRP. We're also working on the next MFF, and more than reading reports, it's important to be on the ground and understand how this major challenge was built. There were good things, bad things, but we heard Edith Estrela say, and Siegfried say as well, one of the things that was relevant to Portugal. Portugal had a huge financial envelope, and this was very important. Let me just stress a few things. Portugal delivered the 8th reprogramming documents, and we will be soon handing in the 9th. In the budget committee in the European Parliament, we discussed the RRP and the possibility of widening it. We know that this is not at all possible. As far as we know right now, the deadlines are the deadlines. And this is a crucial moment to bring all governments together of 27 member states with all parliaments and try to have them negotiate with the European Commission what can be done. And I'm sure there's still a lot to be done, transferring funds to other programs that are closer or are more apt to be applied and used. And we also have to look at this MFF, because sometimes we can work with the MFF. I was once at the head of a municipality, and when we have to make decisions and we have an RRP with 100% funds and with an MFF with more time to execute and finances only 40%, this is something that we have to ponder. Pedro Domingues yesterday talked about how hard it is to find the necessary resources, and all of us know how difficult this may be. There were two concurrent programs, and this takes nothing away from the merits of the RRP, but it makes it all that more challenging, the execution of these funds. And that's why it is important for parliaments and governments to find the path to deliver in the execution and not compromise it and not have funds taken away. Yet another thing that I think is important stems from the experience I have, and I'm privileged enough to have as my co-reporter for the next MFF, Siegfried. This makes all our work much easier, but there are some things that we as Portuguese must ponder. Housing issues and other types of investment that should keep happening. We should maintain this virtuous triangle of cooperation of European funds, local and central governments, and municipal governments as well, and how they should all focus on housing, and the way something that didn't happen with RRP, there were two fields, less privileged communities in Lisbon and Porto that needed involvement of local and regional stakeholders, but we have to think about involving them at the earliest stages in a local, regional, when with our regional partners. I worked with the RRP. It's hard to let this go. I think working with the RRP brings me another point of view, and we have a constitution that keeps regional powers and away from the next MFF, and we need to think about this. We need to reflect and try to correct this, because it keeping regions and local authorities away from the RRP or the next MFF would not be good. We need to think about how we can change some of the things that we couldn't change at the onset of the last MFF.
Carla, thank you. Next is Angelika Winzig. Angelika, please.
Sí.
Yes. Thank you, dear colleagues, so much for being here today.
Microphone, please. No microphone.
This is already my second mission, and I was impressed from my first mission in Croatia, but I think you have done the same good job here in Portugal. And I'm looking forward to the end, when we can see the palace at the end. Now, but last period we concentrated. I'm a member of the ITRE, ECON and EMPEL committee, and ITRE committee is my main committee. And last period we concentrated on the Green Deal. We have forgotten sometimes our competitiveness, and now we have serious troubles in Germany, we have serious troubles in Austria and so on. And with Draghi and Letta we worked again on the start-up of the competitiveness. We started with the so-called omnibus system, but the omnibus system is only a repair system. It's not the end. We repair what we have done in the past. And we have to step into a new area, and the new area is, for me and for us, the EU Acceleration Act. What's this? This is the new program, the Industrial Acceleration Program, with the main 4 points. faster permitting. The Act aims to accelerate industrial modernization, setting maximum timelines, for example, 18 months for a specific decarbonization project through digital single contact and on one-stop shop. The second pillar is made in Europe and low carbon procurement. From 2029, public tenders will require products to meet strict low carbon and, in some cases, made in Europe standards to boost domestic demand. The third one is the strategic investment screening, also very important. Foreign investments over 100 euro million, a billion, in critical sectors, for example, batteries, solar, PV, raw materials, from countries controlling lower 40% of global capacity will be screened to ensure they provide added value to the European Union. And the last one is the industrial acceleration areas. Member states can designate specific areas for rapid development of net zero manufacturing clusters. We had this already in the past, and now we are starting through. And I think this is a very, very good example for net zero manufacturing clusters. And this is, I want to tell you about the economy, what we are doing now in the European Parliament. Thank you.
Angelika, thank you. And now, Madam Chair, the floor is back to you.
Thank you. Ok, muito bem. Então, sendo assim, vou pedir ao deputado Pedro.
I'd like to give the floor to Pedro Coimbra. Rather, I'd like to ask him to chair the following panel and give the floor to three speakers on the Portuguese side.
Muito bem, senhoras e senhores deputados, assim sendo, vamos fazer uma ronda.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's have a tour de table and give the floor to the VPs of each one of the committees. So I'll give the floor to Francisco Figueira, the first VP of the 6th Commission. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to greet everyone and welcome the MEPs that are with us today. I think it's clear that the RRP was very successful in our country. There were some issues at start, and these issues were linked to how complex the targets and milestones set by the Portuguese government were. There were also some issues in finding the human resources for this. And now, at the latter stages, we had some issues with the storms that created some problems towards the end of some of the projects. But I think everyone can agree that this program was very successfully applied in Portugal. It was very helpful in many sectors of our economy. And this has been said by other MPs. Let me nonetheless talk about how much the RRP helped some areas with fewer people and the areas that need more territorial cohesion. I think that those are places where the IRP was most active and more significant in finishing some projects that for many years waited for the financing to be implemented. And picking up on where Karol Tavares left off, I'd like to draw your attention for the challenges that Portugal has in the next MFF, especially when it comes to cohesion policies. I'm very concerned, not just with the removal of the importance of municipalities and local governments, and I'm also concerned about the impact it may have on the cohesion of the country. Because if there's a change there, I think this can have a very negative impact in Portugal, in places of low density, low population density, especially in the hinterland of Portugal. And I think we should draw the attention of the European Commission to that, and we all should work towards avoiding any damage that could arise from the MFF in this respect. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. According to my own criteria, I should have given the floor to João Ribeiro, who's at the end of the table. But my notes were incomplete and I wasn't able to actually read your name tag, so I apologize there. So, João Ribeiro is the first vice chair of the Committee on State Reform and Local Government. And then we'll have Pedro Coelho, who is the first vice president on coordination of budget, finance, and public administration. And then we'll have another speaker after that, and we'll be back to good order. Mr. Ribeiro, thank you very much. I'd like to greet my colleagues from the National Assembly and our MEP colleagues. Now, we've heard from someone who clearly supports the government's line. I think it makes sense to hear from someone who perhaps doesn't entirely go along with it. The IRP has been very important to the country, no doubt. It is true that it wasn't used to its full potential to reduce the lack of territorial cohesion that we have in Portugal. Now, this is very clear to anyone who is Portuguese, but if you're from abroad, perhaps this is harder to see. We are completely concentrated along the coastline, and that's where most of our investments can be found. The IRP has contributed to some extent to reducing that inequality between the coastal areas and hinterland, but we've also seen works that have been abandoned because we were unable to carry out structural work in the inland. We have a study underway to construct a motorway from Porto Alegre, one of the district capitals, in the inland. It is a district capital, and yet it has no single motorway access. So it is important that we also share this side of the coin. And this is also why Portugal needs continued community support so that we can plug these gaps in terms of territorial cohesion. We have a very good systems, but we are all concentrated along the coastline, which is of course beautiful, but we mustn't forget about the rest of the country. And it's therefore important to make you aware of this, particularly for those who are not Portuguese among us. We have great potential, but we would need more time for the implementation of this RRP. So we plead with your common sense to look at situations where we might be able to extend deadlines. We understand that this is restricted, but we need to think about what will come after this period. We also saw some difficulties in initiating the RRP activities here in Portugal when it came to presenting projects and so on. We're now in the implementation phase, and I understand that there are differences, but And it's true that we've had a number of legislative elections here which won't have helped either. But it's important to bear in mind. As you are aware, Portugal suffered through a disaster at the start of the year with this the storm systems. Many businesses have not yet received any support to actually rebuild following damages. A great deal of housing has not been rebuilt yet for a number of reasons. Some are uninsured, others do have insurance, but companies are now saying that they're taking 18 months to rebuild roofs and other structural elements. So if there are parts of the RRP that have not been used that could be diverted to that, and if that could be possible within the RRP deadlines, that would be good. But we also have a shortage of manpower facing this real disaster situation. If you look at some of the areas that were hit, they look like war zones. Housing landscapes have been fully destroyed. So I think this is a very particular situation that we need to tackle now. Thank you.
Pedro Coelho.
I now give the floor to Mr. Pedro Coelho, who is the First Vice President of the Budget, Finance and Public Administration Committee. Thank you. I'd like to welcome all the colleagues from the National Parliament as well as the European Parliament. As we've heard, Portugal has been a good student when it comes to applying community funds, and that goes for the RRP too. Our implementation levels are well over 60% today. We're also one of the countries that has submitted the largest number of payment requests to the Commission. This is not new. This has been the case since we gained access to community funds and especially cohesion funds. I would like to raise something related to outermost regions, especially the region of Madeira, which received about 600 million euros under the RRP. Over 805 families have received support. Additional families will receive housing until the end of June. The RRP is currently being implemented. It's in the final stage, but we also have concerns about the future MFF. As you know, the outermost regions have some particular conditions within how the European Union functions, and we have some permanent constraints, circumstances that cannot be addressed because we are islands surrounded by the sea. We have the Pozai Structural Fund, which has funds dedicated to outermost regions. But we have been told that this might change in the future MFF. So I would appeal to our MEP colleagues to consider that given that in the TFEU we have specific allocations for outermost regions, and they are specific. A great deal of this funding is linked to agriculture and fisheries and mobility. This should be funding that the Commission devotes specifically to these outermost regions, as they have done for some time already. Thank you. I will now give the floor back to Her Excellency Edith Strela, but first Ricardo Carvalho from the European Affairs Committee. Thank you. I'd like to welcome Mr. Siegfried Murshan. Thank you for being here with us. It's a pleasure to see you here. Now, on the RRP, the RRM, if you will, this is a priority instrument for Portugal. We did need to make a revision in February 2025, and that was successful. The aim was to speed up the implementation of the RRP with a focus on subsidies, given that the financing component, well, Portugal's rating was considered less attractive. and given that we were able to refinance with attractive interest rate, but also because we wanted to focus on other areas to target our action. Now, from the Social Democratic Party side, we've always said that funds should be implemented speedily, but with a focus on the real economy. And we've also said that it has to be a link between investments and structural reform. So the RRP should not be viewed exclusively as a financial mechanism, but above all as an instrument for financial transformation of the country. We've always been concerned with efficient public expenditure, but and also with measurable results and accountability. It is still challenging, and it has been challenging to do this. Our execution rate is about 60%, which is good, but we're now approaching the end of this programming period, and it's been challenging because we've had to deal with both RRP and Portugal 2030. We have a number of projects that are being implemented simultaneously. And the RRP has brought in a new management paradigm when it comes to community funds, which placed a great deal of demand on our public administration. So I have a couple of questions, not just focused on the RRP, but with a thought to the coming, the future multi-annual financial framework. First of all, we'd like to know how you view the real impact of reforms linked to national plans, and of course here in the case of Portugal. How do you assess this RRP management model? Do you think it is a good model or not? And if we look at the political debates that are now underway, not just in Portugal, but in the European Parliament too, on the future MFF, bearing in mind what the Commission's aims and objectives are, what lessons learned could we take from how the RRP has been managed, and what can we bring into our new management models for the coming MFF? In other words, how could we exert a positive influence on the Commission, given that we probably need a more flexible management model, given our experiences with the RRP? And I'll leave you with an almost rhetorical question. If we copy this management model from the RRP to the MFF, will we actually have the capacity to execute, to implement it to the same extent without involving local and regional authorities in Portugal specifically? Thank you very much. Okay, we've concluded this round, so I would now invite the European Parliament once again and our head of delegation to give the floor to delegation members.
Boa tarde, Sra. Presidente.
Thank you very much for this invitation. We're in the House of Democracy in Portugal. I think we've taken steps to bring the European Parliament closer to national parliaments. It is essential that we align and coordinate, not just in drawing up community policy, but also when it comes to fighting red tape and excessive bureaucracy. I'd start on that, because often as MEPs, we are accused, or the institution of the European Parliament is accused of causing difficulty through legislation that causes difficulty to families, to citizens. So I think that this is a virtuous debate because it really shows that we are moving closer together and we have coordinated public policy that does not stand in the way of people and businesses from competing in our area of the world. Competitiveness is key. And so the policy that we draw becomes especially relevant. I have a couple of notes to share. First, a reflection, because I think this is the right forum for it. The RRP was set up to respond to the economic crisis caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. Pandemic started in 2020, and it was only practically 5 years later that the Next Generation EU funding which came through, and that payments for these programs will benefit primarily next generations. But we have seen a significant delay in the financing kicking in. And the RRP was set up to respond to the needs of businesses who were heavily affected by COVID-19. I recall very clearly these times in Portugal where businesses lost income to the tune of about 40%. So it was very important to inject this money into the economy quickly. We were able to make this analysis, draw up policy to respond. But in my view, it is not acceptable in a world that is undergoing so much change and that needs a rapid, quick reaction. We're now facing what could become an energy crisis. We have to be able, not just as European Union institutions, but in coordination with national institutions, we have to be able to act swiftly and ensure that funds actually reach the real economy. Another reflection I'd like to share is that I think that the RRP contains a number of very important investments. We have singled out the digital and energy transitions. And I think it's absolutely key for the energy transition that we continue on the path of decarbonizing our economy. I know that this is a hot debate where we feel that attention is being moved away from combating climate change, but I think energy efficiency is an opportunity to leverage European competitiveness. Our energy is less competitive than, say, that of the US. So I think the RRP provides good examples of investments being made towards the energy transition, especially given that Portugal, together with Spain, does have the potential to become a European energy hub for clean energy, which would promote energy autonomy and independence. And I still believe that that should be one of the guiding principles when we now negotiate the future MFF. The energy transition does need to take center stage there, even though there are some political powers who would like to see us move back to the economies of the past. But Europe and Portugal need access to cheaper energy. We have the conditions here that would enable that reality. Unfortunately, we're seeing increasing isolationism all over the world, but the energy transition is especially key. And that was the reflection that I wanted to share. This needs to be reflected throughout MFF negotiations. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Tomasz.
Szanowne koleżanki. Colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, dear guests, well, maybe I could argue with my predecessor. I'm a representative of Patriots for Europe, and maybe our assessment of the reality is slightly different, especially when it comes to how much money actually goes from RRF to Poland and how it was disbursed. I don't think what happened was actually optimum, especially that originally the funds were blocked for political reasons. Only later on, when Donald Tusk became prime minister and there was a change of power in Poland, the funds were de-blocked. And the fact that the member states do not have the competence to actually decide freely on where the funds go, and then the debt incurred, well, when we look at the interest, we'll have to pay the interest on the debt until 2058. And based on information from the European Commission that we received, for instance, in 2027, we will pay around 10 billion euros, and not 5 billion, 10 billion euros in interest only. So this is huge amounts of money. And when it comes to actual streams of cash and where they went, well, for instance, if you look at climate policy and energy transition, I don't think that what was proposed was actually fully adjusted to the needs of individual member states. In Poland, you need to do more when it comes to transmission, energy transmission networks. We have places where you can't deal with overproduction of energy, for instance. You need renovation badly. So if you look at this geographically, you should be able to take into account the needs of each and individual region. We definitely need more stable energy production sources that would not depend on climate conditions. Obviously, our energy basket can be supplemented as needed. And one more, maybe more of a question to you, our hosts. Where do you see the weak points of this facility, RRF, and where the changes should go? Should we leave more free will in the hands of member states, or should we do as we do now and trust the EU to tell us how the money should be spent? Thank you. Thank you
very much, Mr. Buzek, for this interesting and very creative intervention.
Thank you very much. I'd now like to ask the Chair of the Committee for State Reform and Local Government, Mr. Almiro Moreira, to distribute the speaking time to the three Parliament speakers who have not yet spoken. Please, thank you very much. I will follow the previous principle. I will give the floor to Eurydice Pereira from the 13th Committee. Thank you very much. I would like to welcome the delegation from the European Parliament. Thank you for being here. I had an initial comment on the RRP and highlighting its value. It is particularly relevant as an instrument because it is a weighty instrument when it comes to development and territorial cohesion in Portugal. So, all the better that we have this program in place. I also wanted to take the opportunity to share a few concerns and warnings. And, of course, I will try to be brief in doing so. I would stress the importance of local powers and local authorities. That is the remit of my committee, after all. In general, they have been good implementers of the RRP, but they do face problems. And I wanted to voice the concerns that they have. It is necessary to know how they should respond to local citizens who are seeing works still being delayed after the storms that we suffered. This reality, this train of storms, was devastating, and we really do need to understand what the local authorities that were hard hit now face. My second concern is what's being done to respond to these delays in municipal works. For instance, where there are administrative barriers, licensing issues. There is a standard set of circumstances that are linked to these processes. And we have free recourse to legal proceedings, of course, and they might delay construction processes. But we need to understand how municipalities can act when faced with such circumstances. And finally, I really wish to stress the aspect of housing. This is a key concern within the RRP, but we do need to ask questions about what will happen to projects that will no longer become a reality because of the lack of manpower, not because it doesn't exist, but because there have been a great number of different construction projects ongoing in parallel in a very short period of time. So naturally, that has led to delays for some projects. Finally, within the framework of housing, we should see a specific budget line under the future MFF, not just for Portugal, but frankly for Portugal it would be vital. Thank you very much. I will now give the floor to Pedro Tavares, Vice President for the Committee on the Economy.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. I'd like to greet all of our MPs, but especially the MEPs visiting here. And I'd like to greet our Portuguese colleagues who have come home again. We tend to be good hosts, and I hope you feel like we are being good hosts. Also, the good weather helps Portuguese tourism. And I don't think tourism was as stressed as it should have been in this RRP. I'll try and be brief about the RRP because much has been said. I'm VP for the Committee for Territorial Cohesion and Economy, and over the past few weeks and months we have been focusing on the RRP. We talked to many, many bodies. We talked with monitoring, auditing, the Court of Auditors. And I would like to direct two questions at the European Parliament delegation to try to understand how you think the European Commission may feel about the hurdles that some countries faced. And we're getting to the deadline for the RRP. And so I believe it's important to see if there's anything in common as to the hurdles various countries have faced. We know that the Economy Committee had a delegation in Sweden, and we know countries apply funds differently. Sweden has somewhat the same population as Portugal, and they had 3.15 billion euros approximately for the whole country, and we have the same population, and we had 22 billion. Of course, executing 3.15 billion is not the same as executing 22 billion. But this is not an excuse for any possible poor execution. We have listened to the social sector, and they complained that they feel they were left behind at the time there was a review of the RRP. And so I'd like to ask, how do you think the European Commission feels about the social sector in Europe? And whether or not you find that there's been a common hurdle to most countries in the European Union. And since energy was brought up, I'd like you to tell us how you're feeling and how do they know about how difficult it is for us, the energy-related issues, and energy efficiency will become more and more a topic in Europe. And unfortunately, Europe is not yet, unfortunately, energy self-reliable, and so I'd like to know which steps are being taken in that direction. I'd like to give the floor to Carlos Pereira, VP of Public Administration Committee and Finance. Thank you very much. I'd like to greet everyone. I will try and say things that have not yet been said. I agree with most of what has been said so far. And there's two things that haven't been mentioned. I'd like to talk about the future that I think is of paramount importance. And then I'd like to go into the RRP, and I'd like to mention the concerns I do have. When it comes to the future, the EU has a lot of experience in managing European funds, and the RRP is maybe a key example thereof. I think it's clear that we need to build solutions that are flexible enough. What do I mean by this? Lydia mentioned this. We created the RRP as a response to the pandemic, but halfway through the pandemic, we had a war and then there was inflation. And we couldn't respond because the RRP was not planned for that. So European programs need to be flexible, and they haven't been so far. This is a very heavy machinery and decisions take time, like Portugal in some cases. But we need to try harder because today we're going through the same. We've mentioned this before. We're at the onset of a war. We don't know the impact it'll have, and the EU has no responses, no fit responses for this. We need to think about this, and with the instruments we have, because they're not flexible enough, they cannot adapt to the situation. The world is going to keep changing, and we need to have the ability to create flexible financial solutions. What I'd like to ask is how to build flexible solutions for the future. And the programs we have, the community framework, the MFFs have been drafted like this for many, many years, and we have to be able to innovate and match the circumstances. Another issue that is relevant for countries, for the EU, and for Portugal. It has to do with the link between simplification and auditing, monitoring. Everybody talks about this, but this is, to my mind, one of the greatest challenges we have in our hands. Portugal has the same challenge. And the question is, how can we simplify? We need to have money and funds and get them to companies and families. And we shouldn't make things more complicated than necessary. So how can we make things easier without losing track of how we apply the funds needs to be more streamlined, and we haven't been able to take that step as of yet. I don't have a silver bullet for this, but this is something that we should reflect on. Yet another thing that I think is very important for the future, the competitiveness in Europe. We need to be competitive, and for that we need to look at our companies. And if we look at Portugal, we think that the SMEs, that are more than 90% of our corporate fabric, they have benefited for RRPs and other financial frameworks. But I think recently someone has tried to transform financing SMEs into financial instruments. And this is an issue because the SMEs are not adjusted to, they're not prepared to benefit of those, of that framework. Who benefits from financial instruments are larger companies. And they have, but they have other financing means at their disposal. So we need to find tailor-made instruments to help SMEs. I understand that Europe likes risk-related instruments, etc. But we need to turn those mechanisms and have them adjust to people in the middle of Alentejo or the Azores or in the middle of Portugal, because they don't even have access to the Portuguese Development Bank. I think the progress of Europe will be based on SMEs, and we're not reaching them. Another very important thing, social aid. I'm sorry, social issue. The speaker corrects himself. One of the most important things is housing, and Europe is very important because Portugal has an issue with housing, but Portugal is not the only country with a problem there. Other countries also have the same issue with housing, and no instrument has been able to help this. And let me also stress the concern we feel about cohesion. Regions and local authorities need to help manage the funds. The funds have been executed and applied with the help of local and regional powers, and who forgets that knows nothing about Europe. Without local and regional powers, it would be much, much harder to apply all the financial instruments that we have. On what is going on with the RRP, and I will try to close now. We have the execution, because we execute very well traditionally, but then there's the impact. And this topic is key. We need to openly discuss this. And the impact of the RRP needs to be established, because the RRP has goals. There were two major reprogramming periods. I don't have the information to tell you whether this is necessary or not, but we need to assess the impact the reprogramming has on the RRP. Because we need to, and to that we need to look at the final impact. We had expected the RRP would help the GDP grow by 2.3%, and we invested in competitiveness, digitalization, and I'd like to know at the end of the day, what kind of impact did this reprogramming have? I have to leave, unfortunately, because there's a hearing with the Minister of Finance, and I have to leave. Thank you. Thank you. This concludes the third round of intervention. I would like to give the floor back to the chair.
For the last 12 minutes, Mohamed Shahim will take the floor, and then myself as well, to react also to some of the statements that were made and to answer some of the legitimate questions asked by Portuguese colleagues. Mohamed, feel free to also react to some of the points made by Portuguese colleagues if you wish, please.
It was a lot, to be honest, and I have to say, first of all, thank you, Madam President, for having us, and all the presidents and vice presidents of the different committees. You know, with these type of talks that we have, usually for me it's very important to, you know, forget about a little bit about the political group that you are part of, because at the end of the day, I strongly believe that we want to improve life in Europe and in Portugal and in every member state. And I think, for me, the RRF program was quite a historic step. That we together, after a significant crisis, came together to jointly try to limit these crisis effects. And then you always have the dilemma of intervention. When you intervene, you are always happy that at least the crisis was not as severe as we maybe would have expected, but people don't feel it. But if you look at the analysis of every almost, let's say, independent economist, they state quite clearly that the crisis has made sure that jobs were not as unnecessarily lost and has limited the negative effects that we've seen compared to other regions in the world after COVID. So I think the RRF has been very successful. And I think Portugal is one of the countries where you could see that the contribution to GDP, to jobs, is quite good. And I think there are some other countries that are quite comparable. I'm from the Netherlands. We did not, I think, have an as precise and as good program as has been presented by the Portuguese and by many other countries. And we were quite late by presenting a plan, also because there was a disagreement on whether we should do it from a national level, how to include the municipalities, how to include the regions. I mean, this is, again, I think the main reason we came here is to listen what is going well and what can we take back also when we are negotiating the MFF to see to what extent we can, let's say, reform it in a way that it reflects a little bit, I think, the positive parts of the RFF. I think the Commission is quite clear. They take the RFF almost as a blueprint for the MFF. And we have here, of course, with Siegfried Murrison and Carla Tavares, the two people that jointly work on a very important program that will affect not only the member states, but also the municipalities and the regions. Very important. I have to say I'm quite sympathetic when it comes to outermost regions. I think they have a special position in the treaties, and we have to assess to what extent we can keep them on board. I think it's very important, especially looking at the geopolitical crisis that we are in today. You know, just imagine if you depend on trade with other regions and looking at what's happening now on energy, especially oil and gas, I can imagine that this affects these outermost regions more significantly than, let's say, Europe's mainland. So let's see what we can do there to limit that that effect. You know, the interesting thing is about these type of programs is that when you ask people who wants change, then we all would like to say change. But then when we go to the nitty-gritty, then people not necessarily volunteer that they are the ones to change. And this is where we are now. We, as Siegfried said yesterday, the solution cannot just be more money. I think the Parliament is trying to increase the budget in order to attack and to handle some of these crises that we are in. But I mean, not resources are never unlimited. And which means the only way forward is to come up with a different approach when it comes to the programs, but also when it comes to, let's say, the architecture. And I think there the Parliament is I think also I've heard many voices here stating that it's very important to keep the regions and the municipalities included. I think that's also the intention of us as a parliament. So for me, the most important element here is to hear what are the successes and how can we take that as a starting point for the MFF. I've heard many comments on energy crisis, how we're going to tackle that. I mean, it's a joint effort. It's not something that we in Brussels will solve without you here in every other European capital. It's a challenge that it's almost impossible for us to assess what the situation will be in a week, let alone in 2 months. It's a very difficult situation that we are in. And I hope that what we've done in the past with the RFF, the lessons we've learned from the MFF, and also the speed under which the Commission with the Member States and Parliament came with this approach, is something I think we all could benefit from. So we are prepared, we know what to do, and if possible, we are there to, again, collectively come with a solution that I think at the end of the day benefits us all. But the starting point now is concluding what is good from the RFF and taking that exercise into the MFF. And those are my comments.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mohammed. Thank you for also reacting to statements made by colleagues from the Portuguese Parliament. Look, let me also add a couple of thoughts. Firstly, the Recovery and Resilience Facility was the biggest package of economic support ever launched in Europe, more than 700 billion euros for citizens, enterprises, regions affected by the pandemic, by its economic and social consequences. More than half of the support coming is grants, is funds which member states received and which they do not have the obligation to pay back. It was for the first time that we gave to the European Commission the permission to borrow money at such a large extent to support member states. It was something unprecedented, and the agreement was that the money should be used to improve the situation, but to also increase the resilience of member states, of the economy, of the public systems, education, healthcare infrastructure. So then when the next crisis hits, because there will for sure be a next crisis, we do not when, we do not know the origin, but there will be always, there is a next crisis. So when the next crisis hits, we are in a better position and the effects upon the people will not be as negative as then. And the agreement was that we give the Commission to borrow money, but in order to make sure that the money is being spent, invested with the best possible results, reforms, of course, are also needed. And Ricardo was also talking about the reforms and the lessons to be learned, was also asking. The lessons to be learned are the following. Firstly, without a doubt, because of the Recovery and Resilience Facility, in many member states, the authorities did reforms which otherwise they would not have done. So there was a positive effect upon reforms, firstly. Secondly, the link between reforms and investments in the Recovery and Resilience Facility was not clear. So for the future, when we will spend EU money from the EU budget, and Mohammed is most certainly right, the public money is limited, and all of us, when we spend people's money, we have a duty to make sure that we reach the best result, the best impact. And to achieve this in the future, the EU budget in the future will be linked to reforms, but we shall learn some of the lessons from the Recovery and Resilience Facility. And one of the lessons is that for the Recovery and Resilience Facility, this link was not so clear. So the European Commission would disburse governments an amount of money if they implement a reform. From Portugal, you do not know so exactly because the reforms were all implemented, so you received all tranches in full. But in other member states, if, for example, a taxation or a pension reform was not implemented, money was blocked and maybe that money was missing for the construction of a highway or for the construction of a hospital. And we want to avoid that beneficiaries are hurt if they have nothing to do with that reform. So the position which I expect the Parliament to take will be that yes, reforms are good, yes, reforms shall be part of the next budget, but the link between reforms and investments should be clear. Money coming for hospitals should be linked only with reforms in the area of healthcare, not in other areas, pensions, taxations, or so on. One of the other lessons from the Recovery and Resilience Facility is that the role of the regions has to be big in the EU budget in the future, and it has to be obligatory and full stop. So for the Recovery and Resilience Facility, and we saw in other member states, we discussed yesterday with representatives of the mayors as well, the governments were obliged to consult and to involve the mayors in the elaboration and implementation of the plan. And we heard yesterday when the plan was elaborated in Portugal in 2020-2021, mayors said, look, we were not too much involved. Of course, we know that time was short, it was a crisis instrument, the deadlines were short, but what Carla and me want to achieve for the next multi-annual financial framework, we are the Parliament's co-rapporteurs, we want to achieve that the role of the local and regional authorities is binding. Because we think that, and this is the view of the majority of members of the European Parliament, the local and regional level authorities are the closest to the citizen, they know particularly for smaller projects the needs best, and if they are involved as well, then also the absorption is faster, people will see results faster. So to answer the question, some of the elements of this RRF model are good, but for sure not everything can be copied into the EU budget in the future. This was a crisis response instrument, a unique one, a limited one, and the budget of the Union should of course also be based on some principles like solidarity and so on. Coming towards the end, the deadlines, and I think João Ribeiro, now he left, but maybe we can transmit the message to him, was talking about the need to prolong. We in the European Parliament also said, of course, we know that this is a unique instrument which is supposed to end. We said for projects which were approved by the Commission, which are already under implementation, maybe the European Commission should consider to give a bit more time to successfully conclude those projects. The European Commission is now has not done that so far, and I think we should not expect it to do this. So 31st of August is the deadline in the European legislation right now for all investments and all reforms to be concluded. For the time being, this is the deadline, and there is no other proposal coming from the European Commission. So the message is, please, on the reforms on which the Parliament has to legislate, let us make sure that in order for Portugal to receive all of the money, we finish everything on time. We know, and we learned yesterday also from the authorities about the impact of the storm and the fact that some projects might not be able to be concluded in time. And we know that the government is moving fast and will submit a revision of the plan to the European Commission soon. And we know that the European Commission will assess this with an open mind. And we are also going to take back to Brussels the message that it will be important for Portugal that the revision of the plan, if the government submits a revision, should be approved by the Commission very fast, so that if one project cannot be concluded, it will be replaced and Portugal can access all of the funds. It won't lose any money. We're ready to take this message back to Brussels as well. This being said, and I think we're also above time, we thank you very much. We think this was a very fruitful discussion, interaction. It helped us to learn, and also in a politically diverse manner, because as Mohamed said, you know, we should, you know, assess in an objective manner, not in a political manner, the implementation of the plan. Thank you very much for this precise and diverse points of view. And as we said, also for the EU budget for the future, for the work that we're doing now to design the EU budget for 2024, 2028, 2034, we are going to try to include these points of view to make sure that the budget will be simple, flexible where needed, but for investments we know that predictability is important, clear, with a clear distinction into a cohesion policy, agriculture policy, which continue to remain important, with a clear role for the regions, sufficient funding for new priorities, and we will not be able to increase the budget for everything, but we can also not do as a union more with a budget which is less. This is why we will have to be moderate when it comes to increases, but, and Mohamed says own resources, we will have to be moderate when it comes to increases, but you know, for sure, our objective is for no member state of the Union to receive less than it received until now, that is clear. But because we have to pay back also the debt from Next Generation EU, in order to be sure that we have enough money for old and new priorities, we have to generate these own resources of the Union, own sources of revenue of the Union, which make the budget more predictable, which allow us to properly fund old new priorities and pay back Next Generation EU. For own resources to be introduced, unanimity of member states is needed and ratification in all national parliaments, so nobody can introduce own resources against the will of the Portuguese parliament. Don't be afraid, but it is important to secure the budget for the future to make progress on these own resources. So please be active in this debate, work with the government, let's try to identify own sources of revenue so that we can continue to fund all needed projects. Thank you very much.
Chegamos ao fim de...
We have reached the end of this meeting. It was a fruitful and very useful debate, which should be continued in the future. Now, before our final thanks, I'd like to thank the European Parliament delegation for this visit. And of course, I also extend thanks to the staff members and interpreters of the European Parliament, says the chair of the meeting. Thank you for your work. I'd also like to thank my colleagues, the chairs and vice chairs of our parliamentary committees, for taking part in this debate. I don't think this is the time to draw hasty conclusions. We will keep this information with us and reflect on it. But it is important that we understand something which became clear here, namely that the Recovery and Resilience Plan is not just a financial mechanism. It is a political mechanism. Based on mutual trust. And Europe has proven that pooling and sharing resources can strengthen our common project. For Portugal, that means more investments in healthcare, in housing, innovation, digitalization, the climate transition, qualifications, which is where the European financial resources have been channeled. I think we're also clear that if we want to defend a strategically autonomous Europe, we nevertheless have to bear in mind that we want it to be socially just, we want it to be competitive, we want it to be territorially cohesive. We want a safe Europe, but we also want it to be true to its founding values. And as has been said repeatedly, we have a social component to the European Union, which has been present since the establishing of the Union, and those objectives must not be abandoned. We don't just want a strong Europe, we want a fair Europe, and then it will be truly autonomous when we protect our citizens. We will be truly united if we are able to strengthen cohesion between all European territories, from the Baltic to the Mediterranean, from the centre of Europe to our Atlantic coast. And for Portugal specifically, I would want to make special mention of our outermost regions. We have many debates on European affairs where we invite members of the legislative assemblies of the autonomous regions of the Azores and Madeira. And perhaps in the future we could hold a meeting such as this one in the Azores or Madeira. I'll leave that seed with you to think about. Finally, we all know that Europe is built on a daily basis. We each make our contribution. It is built on equality between member states, but also on social, cultural, and linguistic diversity, as well as political diversity, which we saw here today with different points of views represented by our different speakers. I didn't do something at the start of the meeting which I should have done. So I'd like to greet Mr. Alfredo de Souza de Jesus, Dr. de Souza de Jesus, who is the head of the European Parliament Liaison Office here in Portugal. I'd like to thank you and your staff for all your contributions to organising this meeting, and also our director Bruno Pinheiro, who represents Portugal in the European Parliament. And thank him for his inestimable help in organising this meeting. I'd also like to thank the support teams of our various parliamentary committees represented here today. Without the support of all these staff members, we wouldn't have been able to make this meeting a reality. Once again, the speaker thanks the interpreters, and I wish you a safe return to Brussels and continued fruitful work in the name of the European Union for our future and for our citizens. Thank you.